Very deliberately, August stepped away and reached for the door, then held it open silently. The captain looked as if he might argue before he looked at August's face and seemingly reconsidered. He yanked on the front of his coat, smoothing the heavy wool, and turned on his heel to exit the kitchens. The soldiers, who had been searching the room, trailed after him, casting hard, if somewhat uncertain, looks in Clara and August's direction. August waited only long enough to assure himself that the soldiers were collecting their horses and departing the Silver Swan stable yard before he closed the door with a loud bang. He turned and leaned against the heavy wood, his eyes lighting on each other remaining occupant before they settled on the boy, still half-hidden behind Clara. Beside her, Anne squirmed.
"Come out from there," he ordered the boy.
The boy shuffled out from behind Clara, regarding August warily with eyes that were too big for his face.
"You never said you were a duke before," he mumbled,
and Clara's suspicions were confirmed.
"Well, in fairness, you never told me your name either."
August crossed his arms over his chest.
"Jonas."
The boy scuffed a toe against the stone floor and ducked his head. August peered at him.
"And how, exactly, did you manage to run afoul of the captain and his posse? Again?"
I was hungry, and I came here, like you said I could."
He stopped, staring resolutely at the floor, his thin face drawn.
"Didn't see the captain till too late."
"Then I'm glad you came. Consider yourself hired."
Clara hid a smile, feeling as if she might cry at the same time. The child's head came up.
"You're being serious?"
August nodded.
"If you're going to eat my food, I think it's fair you work for it."
"Yes, sir."
August didn't correct him.
"Is he going to come back? The captain?"
Jonas asked uneasily.
"If he does, I'll deal with him."
August's jaw was tight, and his eyes swung toward Clara.
"You didn't need to lie."
"Yes, I did." Clara held his gaze. "Occasionally one is in the right place at the right time." August nodded his head in a jerky movement before he turned his attention back to Jonas.
"Perhaps you'd like to be introduced to the rest of the staff here. Make sure you understand your duties in the kitchens, or your duties once we manage to clean up this mess."
The Duke raised a brow at Charlot, and the man nodded in unspoken agreement.
"This is Monsieur Charlot, Jonas. You will do whatever he asks. Understood? When I am not here, he speaks for me. You may go with him now."
"Yes, sir."
He bounded toward Charlot like an eager puppy. The hotelier shot Clara and Anne a worried glance before ushering the boy from the room. Clara sighed. Charlot had no idea how worried he ought to be. She straightened her shoulders as August's eyes returned to her and then slid to his sister. Clara watched as he studied Anne's stained apron, her heated cheeks, and the expression of defiance that had crept across her features.
"Will someone tell me why my sister is standing in the kitchen of my tavern, dressed like a scullery maid? Or are you really going to make me ask?"
"I work here," Anne said flatly.
August gaped at his sister as though she had said something in a foreign language he didn't understand.
"Miss Haywood, perhaps you can try to say something that makes a modicum more sense."
Clara sighed in resignation.
"As part of Haverhall summer term, we place our students in a field of study that they choose as part of their curriculum."
August stared at her before turning to Anne.
And the field of study that you chose was lye soap and kitchen grease?
He asked acidly.
The fields of study that I chose were lodging and food service management, labour and inventory administration, accounting and planning services. Shall I go on?
Anne's words were clipped.
Why?
August asked, raking a hand through his hair.
Because I'm good at it.
But you don't have to.
I know I don't have to. I want to. And, for the record, lye soap is sold at a more attractive price when you buy it in bulk, locally.
Her last sentence had an edge to it.
Clara watched as August pushed himself away from the door.
All of the students do this?
Not this exactly, but something similar, Clara said.
For example?
Clara shrugged.
My brother is currently mentoring 3 aspiring physicians. Small-scale amputations are not a suitable conversation topic at Almax.
That's...
He was clearly struggling for words. He blinked suddenly.
And Charlotte knows about this? About Anne? About what you're doing?
Of course he does. Anne is my student, and consequently his. She isn't his first. The staff believe she is simply his assistant, hired on for the busy summer months. She sighed. No one is aware that she is your sister. And I want to keep it that way.
Anne's face was set in the same hard lines her brother wore so often.
Jesus!
The Duke paced toward a pile of pans that had been abandoned near the center of the room.
Who else knows? The truth about Haverhall Summer School, about what you do here.
Clara rubbed her forehead.
Very few, she said wearily. Most people do not, and will not, see the value in it.
Miss Anne?
The harried question came from the doorway to the tavern. A young maid was standing in the frame, wringing her apron between her fingers.
Their brewer is here, spitting mad because the soldiers took his kegs from the delivery cart. I can't find Mr. Charlotte, and I don't know what to do, but the brewer wants to know if...
I'll deal with him, Anne said briskly, already hurrying forward. Clara saw August frowning after Anne fiercely, but he made no move to stop his sister as she disappeared after the maid.
You think you should have told me why Anne was really here?
He asked without turning around.
You think you should have told me why you were really here?
Clara countered, though the anger she had wielded earlier was missing.
The Duke dropped his head.
Fair enough.
Clara hesitated. She had expected a fight.
Have you taken a good look at Anne's plans for the Trenton Hotel?
His back stiffened.
How do you know about that?
She showed me her drawings.
She's quite good at this, you know. August shook his head, his eyes still fixed on the far side of the kitchens, and Clara had no idea what he was thinking.
What will you do? She asked.
Do?
You own this tavern. You hold all the power. But if you think to punish Charlotte for his role in this, or evict him from his position, I take full responsibility for—
Stop!
The Duke looked up at the ceiling.
What kind of person do you think I am?
Clara bent to retrieve a discarded wooden spoon from near her feet and considered her answer. She had no idea who he was, other than a study in contradictions. He was a man who offered no apology for his ruthless pursuit of wealth, but then offered charity to a ragged boy he didn't know. A man who loved his sister, but refused to set her free.
I honestly don't know.
Then ask me something.
I'm sorry?
Ask me whatever you want to know about me. I promise you the truth.
Clara considered his offer. Her fingers toyed with the handle of the spoon.
My brother told me that your father was incarcerated. Debtor's prison.
The Duke stilled, though he still didn't turn around.
And just how did he come across that piece of trivia?
He said that he had treated your father as a medical student at Marshalsea. For dropsy.
Ah.
August put a hand on the edge of the heavy table.
I suppose I owe your brother a debt of gratitude, then. Not only for his medical assistance, but for his discretion. And yours. Most people do not know that about me.
I suspect most people don't know you at all. The Duke turned and stared at her then. She felt his appraisal like a physical touch.
Perhaps they don't.
His quiet words echoed in the space. Is that what made you start? Your father's imprisonment?
Start?
Clara made a helpless gesture with her free hand.
Doing what it is you do.
She heard August release a breath.
I suppose you could say that. Starvation motivates a man like almost nothing else can. Do you know what it is like to go for months and months without a proper meal? Reduced to scavenging the leavings of others just so that you might survive another day?
He said it casually enough, but underneath she could hear the rawness of that confession. She had heard the same in his defense of Jonas, and it made her heart hurt.
No, I don't.
It sounds counterintuitive, but I could not afford to spend the little money I had managed to put together on things like food or shelter. Everything I had went into my efforts to make that money work for me.
But you won't starve now. You've achieved more than you could ever have expected, more than anyone expected.
And I've told you that only a fool rests on his laurels. Life is not a horse race, with a pretty ribbon for the winner at the end. There is no finish line. Just packs of challengers, hoping to see you fail.
And enough would never be enough, Clara thought with a wistful sadness. August Faulkner would never have enough. That sounds like a life of dissatisfaction and unhappiness. August scoffed.
Hardly. I find satisfaction and happiness in a great number of things.
Name one that doesn't include money or calculating your net worth.
You.
Your Grace.
Sharing dinner with you. Dancing with you.
He took a step toward her. Her fingers tightened on the spoon as if her paltry weapon might be enough to keep him at a safe distance. She was suddenly hot all over.
You're changing the subject.
I was answering your questions.
Pardon my intrusion, Your Grace?
The interruption came from the same doorway through which Anne had vanished, only this time it was Charlot who stood in the frame, looking significantly more composed than the last time she had seen him, though worry shadowed his features.
Our guests are starting to ask questions, he said with a grimace. I will address them, of course, but your presence out in the public room and dining room would go a long way in quelling the rumours that have already started to fly. Rumours that might make our guests worry that they are sleeping in a den of murdering thieves.
Clara heard August mutter a muffled curse.
Very well.
He turned to Clara.
We're not done with this conversation.
Clara swallowed, that addicting mixture of anticipation and desire that she had thought she'd vanquished, threatening to drown her good sense. Her anger toward him might have faded, but that did not mean she was going to let her romantic daydreams lead her astray again.
"Tomorrow, then," she said. Relieved, her voice was steady. "Perhaps after classes have been concluded for the day at Avondale?"
He caught her free hand in his and pressed his lips to the backs of her knuckles, leaving no room for misinterpretation.
"Count on it, Miss Haywood."
Chapter 13. August strode into the hall at Avondale, the door banging loudly as it slammed behind him. The sound reverberated off the polished marble of the floor and off the papered walls, shaking the crystals in the chandelier hanging just over his head. Lady Tabitha was standing in the centre of the hall, artfully arranging a vase of garden flowers and wildflowers that sat on the circular rosewood table in the middle of the entrance. She stopped, her hand frozen in the air, a crimson rose between her fingers.
"Good heavens, Your Grace," she said,
peering at him over a pair of round spectacles.
"We have a butler who is very adept at opening and closing doors if you need assistance with that in the future."
There was a note of reproach in her voice. August frowned, knowing he was behaving rather coarsely. He tried to gather his composure.
"Where might I find Miss Haywood?"
He'd agreed yesterday to wait until her classes were over before seeking her out, but as the morning had crawled by, he'd run out of patience. Had he not been at the Silver Swan until the wee hours of the morning last night, he would have hunted her down then. It had taken his staff hours to right the mess left behind by Captain Buller and his men. Worse, his discreet and not so discreet inquiries into what, or who, had brought them to the tavern in the first place had generated no answers. He supposed he should feel lucky that this was the first time the tavern had been the object of their scrutiny. August knew that private residences and barns were regularly searched.
"I believe she is in the studio with her class."
Lady Tabitha returned her attention to the flowers in front of her and tucked the rose into the vase.
"And where do I find the studio?"
August demanded, already moving toward the stairs. Lady Tabitha slid neatly sideways to block him with more speed than should have been possible.
"I will fetch Miss Haywood for you, Your Grace," she said.
"There is no need,"
he said, stepping around her.
"I can certainly fetch her myself. I need but a moment of her time."
"Miss Haywood expressly asked not to be disturbed."
Lady Tabitha once again slid in front of him, blocking his path to the stairs, and August wondered if perhaps this woman shouldn't be instructing a lesson in footwork at Gentleman Jackson's.
"She'll see me."
"Your Grace."
"Enjoy your morning, Lady Tabitha."
He stepped around her firmly again, moving at a clip that probably couldn't be called a dignified walk. Lady Tabitha might be quick, but he had almost 4 decades on her, and some pride.
"Your Grace, I must warn you that..."
"The flowers look lovely, my lady,"
he called back over his shoulder, taking the stairs 2 at a time. He'd said things yesterday to Clara that he hadn't said to anyone before, and that had left strange feelings doing even stranger things to his insides. The revelation that his sister was meddling in his tavern hadn't been enough to make him forget how Clara had lied to an army captain with the imperiousness of a bloody queen, not only because it was the right thing to do, but also because she understood why it mattered to him. He needed to see her again, needed to make sure she truly understood how much she mattered to him, needed to make sure she understood how he really felt about her, especially after the way he had handled things so far. And he wasn't willing to wait any longer. August reached the top of the stairs and headed left along a panelled hallway hung with portraits of people long dead, judging by their clothing and coiffures. Sconces were lit along the length, supplementing the light streaming in from the tall window directly ahead at the end of the hall. He stopped, listening hard. There, somewhere up ahead, he could hear the muffled sound of voices, punctuated occasionally by a muted laugh. He moved forward silently, his fingers trailing along the smooth wood. The voices got louder, a musical composition of young girls chatting. He smiled slightly, imagining Anne in that room, finally being able to share her artistic talents with other young ladies. Whatever ridiculous ideas Anne had taken into her head about the Silver Swan, at least here she seemed to be making connections, building and strengthening friendships. Perhaps Haverhall was exactly what she needed. He stopped again in front of the heavy door that led to whatever room occupied the very northeast corner of Avondale. A small paper sign had been stuck to the door, "Please do not disturb," written in a feminine hand. Clearly, based on the voices coming from beyond, he had found the studio. He heard the unmistakable voice of Clara, followed by another, her sister perhaps? Rose? The artist? There was another, deeper voice in the mix, and he thought it was that of Lady Theodosia. He frowned, wondering what she was doing in an art class. Not that it mattered. He knocked loudly and turned the handle, pushing the door open, then took four commanding steps into the room.
"I'm sorry to interrupt, Miss Haywood, but I need a moment of your—"
The words died on his lips as he was presented with a tableau that he couldn't quite comprehend. At the front of the room, on a raised dais of some sort, was Lady Theodosia, reclining provocatively on a long settee, wearing nothing other than what looked like a silk scarf draped discreetly over one hip. A braided circlet of wildflowers was set about her head, her long silver hair draped artfully over her shoulder, and a posy of crimson roses held loosely in her hand. Holy Mary Mother! He averted his eyes from the elderly Venus on the dais to find 9 students, including his sister, standing in a loose circle behind their easels and canvases, looking at him with gaping surprise. Clara's sister, Rose, was standing in the centre of the room, a colour-stained apron over her dress and a paintbrush in one hand that had frozen in mid-air. Her other hand was braced on her hip as she met his gaze with a look of utter disdain. From the far side of the room, Clara was stalking toward him. August closed his eyes for a long second, wanting the last minute of his life back. "Have you lost something again, dearie?" Lady Theodosia asked from the dais, and she sounded completely unconcerned that a duke had just walked in on her in a most horrifying déshabille. In fact, she sounded much the same as when she had caught him crouching behind a stone fence. Simply amused. "His ability to read, perhaps?" Rose suggested, and her disdain had not diminished. "The sign on the door read, 'Please do not disturb.' Perhaps I should have drawn it in pictures?" August hastily backed up a step.
"My apologies, my lady. I did not mean to interrupt."
He managed with as much authority as he could muster. "And yet here you are." It was said cheerfully by Lady Theodosia. "Are you interested in modelling?"
"Modelling?"
August repeated dumbly.
"I suspect you'd be quite a glorious eyeful."
August felt his jaw slacken. Holy hell! Was she suggesting— Clara had reached him, and she snaked her arm through his, not breaking stride even as she stepped around the spattered paint.
"Excuse us," she said,
in the perfectly composed voice that he would have expected her to use when confronted with a duke who had just walked in on a mostly naked elderly woman and a collection of young ladies painting her.
"This will take but a moment. Please carry on."
She steered August back and pulled the door firmly shut behind her. August went on the offensive, not even sure where to start, but needing to re-establish control.
"What the hell was..."
He waved his hand in the direction of the firmly closed door.
"That?"
"That's funny, Your Grace, because I was going to ask you the very same thing."
She pulled her arm from his and stepped back, putting her hands on her hips, her cheeks flushed.
"For once, I think my sister may have the right of it. I must assume that you can no longer read."
August ignored that.
"There is a naked woman sprawled out in some sort of Botticellian recreation of the birth of Venus."
"Venus of Urbino."
"I beg your pardon?"
"Botticelli's painting depicts a woman rising from the sea. We were recreating Titian's Venus of Urbino composition, less the individuals in the background and with just a little more clothing."
"With a woman old enough to be my grandmother?"
August demanded. Clara's eyes suddenly went cool.
"I didn't realize there was an age at which one can no longer be considered beautiful. Or desirable."
August felt his mouth snap shut.
"That's not what I meant,"
he said after a moment.
"Then what did you mean?"
"I meant that it is not seemly."
God, he hated the way he sounded right now, like an old, self-important ass. When he got his wits together, he would blame it on the shock.
"Not seemly."
She crossed her arms over her chest and regarded him.
"Which part?"
"Which what?"
"Which part isn't seemly? The part where Lady Theodosia is comfortable and confident in her own skin? Or the part where we ask 10 young women, who have been and will continue to be judged on their looks, to consider that beauty comes in many different forms?"
August opened his mouth and closed it again.
Clara sighed and leaned back against the wall, and August saw her studying an ancient portrait of a woman sitting ramrod straight, a small child on her lap.
"Pretty is as pretty does," she said quietly.
"I beg your pardon?"
"What Rose says all the time. It's why she does what she does."
"Which is what?"
August was confused.
Clara's eyes slid to his, and then away again. "Teach painting classes here in perhaps a somewhat unconventional manner."
"Unconventional? That might be the understatement of the century."
"Well, the century is still young."
"I don't appreciate your flippancy."
Clara shook her head, her lips curling slightly.
"Tell me, Your Grace, do you find me attractive?" August stared at her, uncertain he'd heard her right.
"It's not a trick question," she prompted.
Did he find her attractive?
Bloody hell. He'd been in permanent state of arousal since he'd kissed her. All he could think of was how much he wanted to kiss her again, and then take her to his bed and have his way with her 6 ways to Sunday.
"Yes."
"What is it about me that appeals to you the most?"
"What the hell kind of question is that?"
She turned her head and was watching him, that half-smile pulling at her lips.
"Very well. I'll go first."
She studied him.
"Your loyalty to your sister. your willingness to defend someone who can't defend themselves.
What?
A peculiar feeling was rising up within him like curling smoke, spreading through his chest. The things I find most attractive about you. She returned her attention to the painting opposite her. You are physically striking, and there is, of course, your title and all your wealth. Yet those are not who you are. Those three things are simply what you are. August stared at her, the light streaming in from the tall window beyond, putting her profile in stark relief and catching the deep ruby in the curls brushing her shoulders. Her chin was tipped up slightly, exposing the graceful lines of her neck and the gentle slope of her breasts. He felt adrift here, as if he had lost sight of the shore and was in over his head. Had any woman ever really looked past his title, and his wealth, and his looks? Had he ever wanted them to? He took a step closer, suddenly needing to anchor himself.
Your confidence.
He took another step and found her hand with his. This was what he needed. She was what he needed.
Your unwillingness to apologize for who you are. Your convictions.
Clara closed her eyes.
Those are the things that leave me humbled.
Her eyes opened and flew to his.
That night, I asked you to dance. You gave me a chance and an honor I did not deserve.
He caught her other hand in his and brought both to his lips, pressing a soft kiss on the backs of her knuckles.
I came here to ask you for the same chance again.
Your Grace...
I don't want a temporary tryst.
She was watching with hooded eyes, and he could see the rapid rise and fall of her chest. What do you want, then?
I want you. Whatever you're willing to give.
What I want, and what I can do. Two very different things, Your Grace.
August, damn it,
he whispered harshly.
When I'm with you, I am just August.
She shook her head almost imperceptibly. I can't risk...
I don't want excuses, Clara. I don't want regrets, either.
His fingers tightened on hers.
No regrets. No wondering what might have been. What happened between us had nothing to do with anything else. Not your ships, not my sister, nothing. Tell me you believe that.
He heard her breath hitch. Yes.
Good.
He turned her hands over and kissed the insides of her wrists.
Tell me you want it. What happened between us?
She made a soft noise in her throat. Yes. She whispered.
I am not going to accept less of you, Clara Haywood. I will have you, and you will have me. You will show me everything that you have ever learned about pleasure, and then I will show you more. I will be the man who kisses you until you can't breathe and you can't think.
He leaned closer to her, pressing her back against the wall, his mouth inches from hers. She looked up at him, the raw desire in her eyes unmistakable, and it sent lust ripping through him. He didn't just want her. He needed her. Needed to have her mouth, so hot and wicked, on his. Needed to have her skin, bared and slick, pressed against his. Needed to stroke her, to sink himself deep within her. A vision of her as she had been last night, wrapped around him, her heels digging into his back, made his knees suddenly unsteady. He was so aroused, it hurt.
Say yes, Clara, and keep in mind that I'm not accepting no.
The sliver of space between them was suddenly full of pressure, just like the air before a storm, just before the elements unleashed everything that was wild and terrifying and thrilling.
Yes,
she whispered again. Good girl. They were both breathing hard. Part of me wants to take you right here, right now, against this wall. He brushed her lips with his just the briefest of touches. But the other part of me wants to have you somewhere where I can lock the door. Somewhere where I will take my time exploring you. Where I will learn what makes you whimper and writhe with pleasure. Somewhere where no one will hear you when you scream my name. Because I like to understand what I possess. He could see his own arousal mirrored in the liquid brown pools of her gaze. Her gaze dropped down to his mouth, and he leaned into her, letting her feel just how much he wanted her. Her lips parted. When she was looking at him like that, it was impossible to think beyond his scorching need to have her. But they were standing in a hallway, in plain view of anyone who opened the door. I know how much your position means to you, Clara, and I will do nothing to jeopardize that with my actions. Which wasn't exactly true, if one considered that Haverhall would soon be nothing but a memory, her position along with it. The guilt washed through him again, and he shoved it aside. You should tell her that you own it, a small voice whispered. But to what end? To become the man who had taken everything from her? To have her accuse him of using her again? Nothing would change what had already been done. Haverhall would still be demolished and developed. It would be better to focus her attention on the future. She could start over. The school was more than just a building. In reality, it could be run anywhere. A new property could be purchased eventually. In fact, he could help her find one if it came to that. It wouldn't be Haverhall, of course, but Clara could continue to do what she loved. She'd be happier if she still had Haverhall. A small voice whispered, the legacy left to her by her parents. August ruthlessly smothered another wave of conscience that assaulted him. There was still no world that existed in which he would turn his back on profit for the sake of sentimentality. Legacies be damned. August knew all about legacies. He had, after all, survived his. So, for the moment, he would take Clara Haywood's words to heart and not live with regrets and excuses. He would not live with another decade of regret that he hadn't made her his when he'd had the chance. I will see you tonight, he breathed. Tonight? I'm taking you out to dinner again, when you're done here. She pushed a piece of hair back from her face. Yes. August took an unhealthy amount of pleasure from the slight wobble to her voice. And, for the record, I'm sorry I intruded. I promise it will not happen again. Clara suddenly smiled, a low laugh escaping under her breath. It will be difficult to forget the look on your face any time soon. I don't think I was adequately prepared for the idea of my sister painting naked women. You would prefer her to paint naked men? August glared at her. That's not funny, nor is it appropriate. The smile slid from her face. What is appropriate for Anne? Flowers? Trees? So long as they have all their foliage on, of course. August could feel his teeth grind. Do not mock me. I'm not mocking you. I'm asking you a reasonable question about a young woman who has shown herself immensely capable in class and at the Silver Swan.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm not convinced that's appropriate either.
August growled. An elegant brow rose. I'm sorry to hear that. It was brittle. For the life of me, I can't fathom which part of her skill you find so inappropriate.
She deserves more.
More than happiness?
You're twisting my words.
And you're making me wonder why you think Lady Anne should apologize for who she is.
August bit back a curse. This wasn't how he wanted to end this conversation at all.
7,
he said abruptly.
Be ready at 7 for dinner.
She didn't respond, just gazed at him steadily with those dark eyes. He did not look away. You told me not to stop asking you hard questions, Clara finally said. And I won't. She turned and took a half dozen steps down the hall before she stopped and looked back. So, whenever it is that you find answers to those questions, you may take me out to dinner and share them with me. Chapter 14. It had been 4 days since Clara had left the Duke of Holloway in the north hallway, seething. She had seen him only twice, glimpses of him about the property as she carried on with her classes, and he had carried on with whatever business kept him in Dover. He hadn't even appeared today to check in with Anne when she and the students had a day free. Clara told herself that it was better this way, that the distance was a good thing. I want more than a temporary tryst. Desire spiked and sent her insides fluttering. They had sounded decadent, those words that he had whispered in that hallway. Every wicked thing he had murmured in her ear had instantly infused her with a hot, achy restlessness that teetered on the edge of recklessness. Because she wanted the same thing. But no matter his words and pretty promises, whatever this was between them could only ever be temporary. And the longer he avoided her, the more temporary became. She would never marry and sacrifice her hard-won independence to become a wife, and becoming his mistress was still out of the question. No matter how careful they might be, he was a duke, and as such attracted far too much attention. Eyebrows would be raised in his direction at his odd choice, but such a relationship would destroy any possibility that she might ever teach again. My brother is avoiding me. Clara started, lost in her thoughts as she had been. She found Anne standing near the garden bench where she sat, peering out in the direction of the sea to where Clara could make out the shape of a horse and rider galloping along the ridge. August, she realized, recognizing the dark-haired man who rode effortlessly, as was obvious even from this distance. I'm sorry, Miss Hayward. I didn't mean to startle you. Not at all. Please join me. Clara slid over on the bench, her eyes once again going to the figure racing the wind against the backdrop of the sky. I would have thought the distance your brother has kept would please you, she said, shoving a pang of longing back into the depths from which it had risen. Anne sighed and came to sit next to Clara. It does, I suppose. She was frowning, her fingers wrapped tightly around the edges of a sketchbook. He's probably certain that I'm still furious with him after he walked in on our art class, though if anyone deserved to be furious, it was Lady Theodosia. If Lady Theodosia stopped snickering long enough to be angry, I might agree with you. Clara replied, with a wry smile. But to be fair, it might be more a matter of your brother avoiding me. Avoiding you? Why? Because I don't think he liked what I had to say after his theatrical entrance into that studio, and his subsequent exit. Whatever you said, I'm quite sure you were justified. Yes, but that doesn't mean he agreed. Anne looked down at her book. He's so stubborn sometimes, so unbending.
unwilling to look beyond the gilded box he's built for himself. I find it maddening.
I can see that. But he cares a great deal for you, you know?
Anne flushed slightly.
I know. I'm sorry. I do him a disservice by speaking of him like this. I just don't know what to do sometimes. He refuses to listen. He refuses to see me, the real me, not the person he thinks I should become.
She was twisting her skirts in her fingers, and with her hair pulled back in a simple braid, she looked painfully young. Clara was silent for a moment as the horse and rider disappeared from view. She reached out and snapped off an errant rose that was pushing up against the side of the bench seat.
Why?
She finally asked. Anne looked over at her, her forehead creased.
Why what?
Why does your brother not listen to you? Why does he think he knows what is best for you? Anne's pretty blue eyes skittered away.
You don't have to answer me,
Clara said gently. Anne put the sketchbook in her lap and smoothed her palms over the cover.
My father was incarcerated in debtor's prison.
I know. Anne's head snapped up, and she met Clara's eyes with startled surprise.
You know?
Yes. Anne looked down again, her fingers worrying a loose thread on the binding that ran along the top of the pages.
My father was a wastrel. After my mother died, he was thrown into Marshalsea, because the only thing that had kept him out up till then was what my mother had managed to earn sewing. She hesitated. I lived there too, when he was there, in Marshalsea.
Clara felt the breath leave her lungs, even as understanding dawned. She should have guessed that.
For how long?
She asked carefully.
5 years.
Anne's fingers stilled on the edges of the book.
It's not as if I weren't free to come and go as I pleased during the day, she said. And August somehow managed to scrape up enough to pay the jailers to ensure I didn't end up in a workhouse. He managed to make sure that my father and I were fed, at least most of the time, and the roof over our heads may have sheltered more rats and flies than people, but altogether we didn't freeze in the winter, which was more than August had in those years.
Is that why you stayed with your father and didn't live with your brother? Anne shook her head.
August never talks about it, but I know he had nothing, and anything he could spare went to us. I know he endured at least one winter on the streets, though I suspect it was two. And had I been left on the streets with him...
She trailed off, not needing to finish that thought.
After August managed to get my father out of prison, we all lived in a single room just off Fleet. August was barely there, and Father wasn't well, so I looked after him. There was a woman in our building who took in laundry, and I would do deliveries for her for whatever coin she could spare. We still had nothing to our name in those years that wasn't begged or borrowed. But I had everything. Everything that mattered.
She looked down.
I know that doesn't make any sense.
It makes perfect sense, Clara told her.
I owe my brother everything, she said after a moment, and I know that, and I'm grateful, and I want to make him proud of me. But now that he has power and a title and more money than we could ever spend in 5 lifetimes, he wants...
Anne stopped. He wants you to have all the things you didn't have before.
He wants to make sure that you will never want for anything ever again.
Clara finished for her quietly.
He wants to put me in a safe cage with golden bars, where the unpleasantness of life might never have the chance to touch me ever again,
This is what he believes will ensure my happiness.
Clara ran the tip of her finger along the soft pink petals of the rose in her hand.
Have you told him this? What you just told me? I've tried. So many times he insists he wants me to be happy. I've tried to tell him that my happiness cannot be bought with silk gowns and strings of pearls, that my happiness cannot be guaranteed simply because I marry a man with just as much money as August.
She tipped her head back and looked bleakly up at the sky.
He just won't listen.
A silence fell between the two women, Clara considering very carefully what Anne had said.
Knowing what I know of your brother, I suspect he feels guilty for every day that you were in that prison.
That's absurd. I don't blame him. None of it was his fault. He did everything he could and has absolutely nothing to feel guilty for.
Did you tell him that?
Anne straightened and blinked.
I'm not sure. She was frowning. But August is one of the smartest people I know. He must know that.
Clara tipped her head.
What if he doesn't? I'm not sure it would make a difference.
There is a singularly easy way to find out.
Perhaps.
Anne sounded thoughtful.
Do you know the funniest part about this all? And by funny I don't mean humorous, but ironic. The time I spent in Marshalsea is what taught me about accommodating large quantities of people, how to feed them, how to house them, how to provide the necessities. Granted, it was a cruel and desperate education, driven by corrupt and greedy jailers, but an education nonetheless, and one I haven't forgotten, one I want to be able to use. I want to be able to manage a real inn or a hotel because I love the logistics. And I'm good at it. And the profits can outweigh those of a prison if one does it right.
She caught Clara's look.
Prisons are a thriving business that revolves around profit.
She made a face.
I'm surprised August hasn't bought one.
A prison? Surely not.
If he thought he could profit from it, he would.
Anne pressed her sketchbook to her chest.
There is no amount of money that will ever make my brother feel worthy or safe, she said a little sadly.
Clara felt her heart ache. He certainly seems driven.
He's had to be, and I'm well aware I've benefited from all his determination and brilliance and ambition.
Anne glanced around her at the lavish gardens.
But I can't change who I am simply because our circumstances have altered.
Be patient, Clara said. Rome wasn't built in a day. Keep talking to him. Tell him what you've told me.
Thank you, Miss Haywood.
For what?
For listening. Not judging. Understanding.
You're welcome. Clara smiled at her. Your brother is a good man, and I think he'll come to understand, too.
Anne opened her mouth to answer, but her eyes suddenly flickered over Clara's shoulder. I think you have company,
she murmured. Clara turned to find Matthias Stilton at the far side of the garden, walking toward them down the manicured path, his step jaunty and his smile wide. He waved, and Clara lifted her hand in greeting.
Ah, Mr. Stilton, early as usual, come to collect me for a drive.
Clara tried to drum up some more enthusiasm.
Why are you going, if you would rather not?
Anne asked. Apparently, Clara's manufactured enthusiasm had failed to convince. She sighed.
Because I promised I would. He's harmless, if a little long-winded. Though I confess I might have been provoked into accepting Mr. Stilton's offer by your brother.
August has that effect on people,
Anne Stage whispered.
Provoking them, that is.
You have no idea, Clara murmured. Do you wish an introduction? She asked Anne.
By all means, Anne replied. I do not want to appear rude.
Clara pasted a wide, welcoming smile on her face.
Mr. Stilton, how lovely to see you, she said as he approached.
Good God, but it almost hurt to look at the chartreuse and burgundy-striped coat he wore.
What a glorious day, is it not?
He asked.
It is, Clara agreed. Lady Anne, may I present Mr. Matthias Stilton? He's the gentleman who oft accompanies Rose and me to the British Museum while we're in London. Mr. Stilton, this is Lady Anne, the Duke of Holloway's sister.
Stilton stared at Anne almost a second too long before he bowed low.
A great pleasure to make your acquaintance, my lady.
And you as well, Anne replied.
I do hope I am not interrupting, Stilton went on. Lady Theodosia was kind enough to tell me that you could be found out here enjoying the splendid gardens. I almost think that perhaps we should simply tour the grounds of Avondale together as opposed to driving.
Clara kept her smile firmly in place, all the while envisioning Stilton and herself running into August somewhere along the way. No, it would be much more prudent simply to leave.
I'd prefer to drive if it's all the same to you, she said politely. The wildflowers at this time of year are truly a sight to be seen. I thought we might head up towards the castle, where the views of the sea are best.
Of course. Of course, Miss Haywood.
He smiled broadly at her.
Your wish is my command.
Shall we?
Clara rose, and Anne with her.
Good day, Mr. Stilton. Miss Haywood, Anne said. Enjoy your afternoon.
Thank you. Clara watched Anne wander back in the direction of the house.
I didn't realize that the Duke's sister was also in Dover, Stilton said.
Yes, Lady Anne is one of my students.
Of course. How delightful.
They made their way around the side of the house, Clara's eyes sweeping the rolling fields one last time for a dark-haired rider, but finding the horizon empty. They reached the front drive of Avondale, where a hired carriage sat, the team waiting patiently. Clara allowed herself to be handed up and settled back, determined to enjoy the outing and put all thoughts of a sulking, brooding, and provoking Duke out of her mind. August drew the winded mare to a stop, nearly as out of breath as the horse. It would seem that no amount of galloping or trekking did anything to improve his mindset. He was well aware he was acting irrationally and discourteously, but damn it, nothing had gone as he had planned since the day he had arrived in Dover. To start with, he hadn't had a decent sleep in 4 nights. He was tormented by dreams of Clara Haywood and his distracting, all-consuming need to have her. Teased by images of everything that he had planned to do with her, and to her, and for her, until that damn conversation in that damn hallway had suddenly gotten away from him. He had not appreciated her words nor her pointed questions.
You're making me wonder why you think Lady Anne should apologize for who she is.
He'd never asked his sister to apologize for who she was. He loved her too much for that. But it wasn't unreasonable to ask that she alter her behaviour and her expectations, was it? Which wasn't the same thing at all.
Was it? Whenever it is that you find answers to those questions, you may take me out to dinner and share them with me.
he did not appreciate her ultimatum either. Clara hadn't apologized. In fact, he had seen neither hide nor hair of her since that afternoon. Though it might have something to do with the fact that he'd avoided Avondale completely.